Welcome, Shalom Aleichem. We're going to begin tonight on the top of Daf Dalim and Aleph. We're going to be beginning a new sugya tonight. Essentially, it's the beginning of a sugya, coming at the heels of last week's Gemara, which we'll recap in a moment. But a rather lengthy sugya, one that has many different components and parts, really somewhat self-contained. Does not really relate directly to Sanhedrin per se. The topic is one that touches upon several different sectors of Shas. Really a very fascinating topic. So just to recap, just so we remember where we are and how we got here, last week we saw in the bottom of Gimel Amud Beis a brisa which tells us that there's a machlokes between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Yehuda as to whether or not there are supposed to be three or five dayonim for a bezdin, for dinim mamonis. The brisa begins with the words dinim mamonis b'shlosha, that's the shittas Tanakama, the shittas Rabbanan, that's the one we've seen until now. Rebbe Omer b'chamisha. Rebbe says, however, that there's a requirement for five dayonim. And the Gemara discusses why that's so. The conclusion of the Gemara, which we saw at the end of last week, was that this machlokas came down to a interpretation of the psukim. The psukim, from which we learn the concept of the number of judges, speaks about Elohim, right? Elohim being judges. Previously we saw that Elohim is mentioned three times. But Rebbe says, if you take a look, the pasuk says, Asher Yarshi'un Elohim. Yarshi'un is a reference to, speaking in plural form, so we assume that what? That counts as two. Asher Yarshi'un Elohim is trade. I'm reading now two lines from the bottom of Gimel Amud Beis. Never Elohim Lamata ben Elohim Lamala. So then we say, okay, well it says Elohim before and after. Malu mata, just like in one case where it says Asher Yashin Elohim it's Shnayim, Aplu Malu Shnayim. So we basically say there are two references Elohim in the Pesukim. 2 plus 2 is 4. Ve'ein bezin shakul, but we can't have an even number bezin, and therefore Masivan Leimanacha. Therefore we add one more, and we have 5. Harei kan chamishin. The Rabbanon on top of Dalam and Aleph say no. Yarshi onksiv. Yarshi onksiv meaning it's true that if you look in the Torah. It is, when we read the Torah, rather, it's pronounced Yarshi'un, and that implies plural. However, the way it is written in the Torah seems to imply that it is a singular, it's to be understood in the singular form, because if you read it, Yarshi'un, it's Belashon Yachid. So that is the, you know, that's the conclusion of this past segment, which is certainly related to Sanhedrin, in terms of everything we've been learning until now. But now the Gemara on the top of Dalam and Aleph talks about their machlokes in a more global sense. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak bar Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yochanan. So Rabbi Yitzchak bar Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yochanan says the following: there are several Tanoim that agree, that all hold to a certain position. Rebbe, Rabbi Yehuda ben Roetz, Beis Shammai, Rabbi Shimon, and Rabbi Kiva. Right, all five of those Tanoim hold kulhu sviruluhu. They all hold Yesh Eim LaMikra. They all hold Yesh Eim LaMikra. What does Yesh Eim LaMikra mean? So it says Rashi in the top of the page, Basar Kriyaz Linan, Dehi Ikar, that when we look at words in the Torah, and this is not always the case, but it's certainly from time to time, it's not the most uncommon of situations, when you come to a word that is read in a way that does not reflect accurately the way it is written, that there's a difference between the way the word appears and the way we pronounce the word. So the question is, do we give preference to the way the word is written or the way the word is pronounced? So Yeshem LaMikra means we give preference to the way the word is pronounced. Basakriya Azlinan, that's called Yeshem LaMikra, which for now we'll translate it as there is greater meaning, authority, preference that's given to the way the word is pronounced. Yeshem Lamasores, which is the other position, says no. What is ultimately going to be prevailing is going to be not the way the word is pronounced, but rather the way the word is written, the way it appears inside the Sefer Torah. So Rabbi Yitzchak is saying over here that we have five Tanoim. Rabbi Yehuda ben Roetz, Beis Shammai, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Kiva, all hold Yesh Eim LaMikra. Yesh Eim LaMikra. Before we actually go, Mark is not going to go on and list all of these Tanoim, and we're going to see how in fact they hold this. Let's just talk about this phrase for a moment. Yeshem lamikra, yeshem lamasoras. So, first of all, take a look at the sheet. We'll start with source number two, and then we'll come back to number one. Let's start with the word, well, yesh, there's nothing so, you know, controversial about the word yesh. I can't hear, I'm sorry. It's not the same as cream, not necessarily the same, but, you know, similar concept. So the question is, what does this mean, aim? Yesh aim lamikra, yesh aim lamasaras. How do we understand the word aim? What does the word aim mean normally? Source? Where does aim mean? Aim means a source? I'm sorry, you don't understand what you're saying. Right, so aim means mother, and so maybe over here it means like the source of something. Okay, good, very interesting. So aim means mother. Aim means mother. So what does it mean over here? Mother as opposed to, let's say, father. Yesh aim, yesh av lamikra, yesh av lamasaras. Why do you say yesh aim? So in source number two, in the Osar Gaonim, they quote the following, he asked that question. Why does Chazal say yesh aim lamikra, yesh aim lamasaras? Well, Amru, they should say of. For example, we find other cases, like it says, binyan av, zeb b'nei av, and it doesn't say aim. Right? The concept of a binyan av is a certain precedent that is found in the Torah that is applicable in other situations as well. That's called the binyan av, zeb b'nei av. Lomer doesn't say aim. On the other hand, there's an expression known as a baskol, but it's not called a ben kol. Right? So what's going on over here? Why sometimes we say of aim, sometimes ben bas? What's going on? So tshuva lo shemanu bazos klum. So starts off by saying there's no really great explanation that we have found for this. Ela pa'amim sha'amrim lashin zachar va'amrim of. There are times that what it is this concept is presented b'lashon zachar in masculine form, such as av, kigon, for example, binyan av, mishnei ksuvim, binyan echad, v'kasev echad, u'kigon ahudi amrinon, like it says, the Gemara in Shabbos, avuhon d'kulu dam. Right? The Gemara over there is talking about the concept of pizui mitzvah, and the Gemara is looking at different cases in the Torah with this concept of pizui mitzvah, and the Gemara over there has an expression, avuhon d'kulu dam, which means the paradigmatic case. Literally means their father, but it means the way it's understood. Rashi explains over there, Avun shiyumadu kulam imanu. The example from which we could learn others is dumb. In that case, kisei adam. So Eli says yesh lomar, but perhaps we could say the following: Shemakom sheosa osa davar ikur lilmod imanu davar acher. In a case where what we are saying that this particular matter, this halacha, this word, this concept is being used as a precedent from which we can apply to other cases, so then we call it of. V'zesh amen, that's why it says, yesh ein lamikra. That's why it doesn't say yesh of lamikra, it says yesh ein lamikra. Why? Hov ein lamedim imenu l'devar acherim. We do not take this concept over here and apply it to other cases. Elo dia ma'asom f'malakriya l'masores. Rather, we're just talking in this particular case, what do we give preference to? The way the word is pronounced or the way the word appears? So yesh aim means which is the more significant in this case, but it's not called an of because we are not looking to apply it in other cases. It's very interesting. It's an interesting chiluk. We also speak about avos like we began Bava Kama with arbavos nezikin, the avos malachos. You know, I think that may fit into this this theory as well, because an of over there means like the head of a category, the name of a category from which we derive other things which we call toldos, right? Derivatives. So what he's saying over here is that perhaps the word of, the masculine form is used when the connotation is that other things will come from this. Aim is used when describing something which is means we prefer it in this particular case, but not necessarily meant to convey that it should be applied elsewhere. So that's as far as the word aim is concerned. It's unusual to see it used like this. Yesh aim lamikra, yesh aim lamasaras. Another question, we're going to go back to source number one right now. Yesh aim lamikra. So lamikra, that word, you know, we know what that means. The way the word is read, the way it's pronounced. Kriya. But what does it mean, yesh aim lamasaras? Masaras means, what does masara mean? Tradition. So it's a tricky word to use over here. Why? Because they're both tradition. The way we pronounce a word is also tradition. So why is it that we call it yet one yeshem lamikra yeshem masoras? So the Yavra Mat says the following. top, the middle of the top line. My time karu la l'ksiva masoras. Why is it that we call the way the word is written the masoras? Kidavar hamasur l'miyat b'nei adam. Masoras implies like it's something which is transmitted to a small group of people. V'lo l'zula sama, not others. Mishum b'mikra, when the way the word is read, migras garis papum de rubid inshi. Most people know how to read the Torah. That's true, not everybody is a seasoned balkore, but people who are, you know, who are careful to review the parasha and read the Torah and study the Torah. So people are familiar the way the words are supposed to be pronounced. So therefore, we don't call the way a word is pronounced, we don't call it Masoras. It's true, there's a tradition, but it's so commonly known, we don't call it Masoras. About Ksiva, the Lo Yadiel El Sifre, the Masalu, Malib Chaser. However, the way a word is supposed to be written in the Sefer Torah, so that's not something that everyone is accustomed to knowing. Really, only the Sofrim who are trained and have to be very careful and very precise in their work to make sure that every word that is supposed to be Mali is written Mali, every word that's supposed to be Ruchas is written Chasus. That's why it's called Masoras. So it's just, you know, two very interesting points, because we're going to be using these expressions a lot over the next several weeks. Yesh Eim LaMikra, Yesh Eim LaMasoras. So Eim really means, could mean the same as of, but that word is used over here perhaps, as I said, because it means that it is to be applied locally over here but not elsewhere. And the concept of mikra versus masoras, mikra is something which means to read, but it's not called a masora necessarily, because everybody is accustomed to knowing the proper way to read a word, as opposed to the word masoras, which implies this is something which is not known to everyone. Rather, it's based on a special masora, which only a select few people would be familiar with. Okay, so just getting back to the Gemara now, the Gemara says that there are five Tanoim, Rebbe, Rehuda ben Roitz, Beishame, Beshimon, Rebbe Kiva, who all hold Yeshem LeMikra. So now what the Gemara is going to do is Gemara is going to go down each one of them. So what we're going to do tonight, Ezra Hashem, is we're going to make our way towards the bottom of the page by taking a look at all of these examples, one by one. We're not going to spend too much time on any one of them, but, you know, several of them are going to require some introduction just to understand what it is that we're talking about. And then, when we conclude this segment of the Gemara, so we can catch our breath, see what it is that we've done, and then see how the Gemara is going to go back and sort of retrace its steps, reconsidering each and every one of these cases. So first of all, who's the first on the list? Rebbe. So where does Rebbe hold Yeshen LeMikra? So the Gemara says, Rebbe, Hada Amra. We already told you that. That doesn't need to be repeated. Where did we see already that Rebbe holds Yeshen LeMikra? So that was the previous Gemara. Rebbe holds you need five Dayanim on a Bezin. Why? Because it says, Asher Yashu Neluhim. That's two. Two plus two is four. And then you have to work for... But look, say the Rabbanan, look in the Torah. It says, Yud Reishin, Yud Ayin Nun. Doesn't say Ayin Vav Nun. Asher Yashion Ksiv. So Rebbe holds Yeshem LeMikra. When a word is written one way, but is pronounced a different way, we follow the way the word is pronounced. So there we see that Rebbe holds Yeshem LeMikra. Fine. What about Rebbe Yehuda ben Roitz? Rebbe Yehuda ben Roitz, Tanya, the Gemara quotes a Braisa. Shalu Tamidim. As Rebbe Yehuda ben Roitz. Tamidim asked Rebbe Yehuda ben Roitz the following question. Ekra ani shivim. I could read the word shivim. Yochol tehe yoledes nekeva tzmeya shivim. I would therefore think that a woman who gave birth to a female child should be tmeya, should be impure for 70 days. What's going on over here? What's the background? So take a look at the psukim in source number one. These psukim come from the very beginning, I'm sorry, source number three. Come from the beginning of Parshas Tazria. This is Vayikra, Perek Yudal. Vayidaber Hashem and Moshe Limor. Daber Obedei Yisrael Limor. Speak to the people and tell them, Isha ki Tazria v'yaldo zachor v'thama shivas yomim ki mei nidas v'osat itma. That when a woman conceives and gives birth to a male child, she is going to be tmeya for 7 days, just like a woman is tmeya when she becomes a nida. Tumas leid is the same as tumas nida. So automatically, after childbirth for a boy, tuma for 7 days. It would be very, very unlikely, maybe even impossible that a woman could actually deliver a child and there not actually be any loss of blood at the time. There would have to be uterine bleeding. But even if there were not, she would still be considered tumeya. That's the concept of tumas leida. So the Torah says, when you have a boy, there's tumah for 7 days. Uvayom hashmini, on the 8th day, imol b'sar aloso, we give the baby a bris. Ushloshim yom, ushloshes yamim, Teshev b'dmei tahara. And then, after the period of 7 days, she can go to the mikvah. And then for 33 days, she is considered to be tahora. B'chol kodesh lo sigavi al mikdash lo savo ad melo simei tahara. She is not to go to the mikdash or touch any kodshim until the conclusion of the period known as the Yimei Tahara. So what does it mean the Yimei Tahara then? She can't go to the mikvah, she can't touch kodshim. So this means for the purpose of having intimate contact with her husband. After 7 days, she can go to the mikvah, and she has 33 days, which are called Yimei Tahara. The big chiddush over here is that even if she continues to bleed, even if there continues to be residual blood, either related to the childbirth or not, the Torah says that's called Dam Tahar. Now, halacha l'maaseh, we don't pafkin that way, so it would be, you know, a woman's not going to go to the mikvah 1 week after she has a child, but in practice, according to the Torah, Mikra Adin, so that's what the Torah says. When you have a baby boy, Tmeya for 7 days, and then 33 days of Tahara, even if she has bleeding, it's considered to be Dam Tahar. And then the Torah says, in the Keva Teleid, if she has a baby girl, V'tama Shvu'ayim Kenidasa, she is then going to be Tmeya not for 7 days, but for 14 days, Shvu'ayim means 2 weeks, and after the 2 weeks, there are then 66 days of Yimei Tahara. So the Torah says when a woman has a baby boy, 7 days of Tumah followed by 33 days of Tahara. When she has a girl, 14 days of Tumah followed by 66 days of Tahara. Okay? So that's the background. So now come the students of Rebbe Yudimer Rois, and they say, what do they say? They said, Rebbe, Ekra Ani Shivim. You saw that word and I bolded for you in source number 3. Vitama, so how do you read that? Shvuayim. Shvuayim, which means 2 weeks. However, Ekra Ani, I could read that word Shivim. I could read it Shivim, which would imply that what? A woman is going to be Tmei not for 2 weeks, but for 70 days. Ekra Ani Shivim. Yochol Teheyo Ledes Nekeva Tmei Shivim. Therefore, perhaps one would think that when a woman gives birth to a baby girl, she should be Tmeya for 70 days. Amar lahen. So Yehuda Ben Roi says to them, no. Timei v'tiyah b'zachar, v'timei v'tiyah b'nekeva. He says, look, the Torah prescribes a period of Tumah followed by a period of Tahara for a boy. And similarly, the Torah describes a period of Tumah followed by a period of Tahara for a girl. Ma kishatiyah b'zachar b'nekeva keflayim. Just like when you look at the Yimei Tahara, it is double for a girl than it is for a boy. How do we see that? Because the Torah says, for a boy, there are how many days of Tahara? 33. And for a girl, how many days of Tahara? 66. So too, we will say, Af, kishitime b'zachar b'nekeva kaflayim. So too what? When we compare the days of Tumah, we will follow that same pattern. Just like for a boy, just like the Yimei Tahara doubled, the same would be the Yimei Tumah. So therefore, for a boy, the Torah says she's Tmeya for 7 days. So for a girl, it should be 14 days. Namely, Shivuayim, but not Shizim. So with that, Rebbe Yudim Eroetz reassured his Talmidim that they should not, in fact, think that the Torah is suggesting or implying that there is Tumah over here, Tumah. For 70 days. It's not Shivim, but rather it's Shivuayim. And we learn this because of the comparison that's being made to Tumah of Tahara Zachar. And then it says, La'achar sheyatsu, after they left, right, it sounds like Talmidim came to him and asked him a question. He gave them an answer. La'achar sheyatsu, once they left, yatsu ma'achar achareim. He went out and he followed them. And Amar lahen, he screamed to them, I'atem zekukim l'kach. He said, the truth of the matter is, you don't need that reason. I gave you a whole story, you don't need it. Shvuayim karinan, v'yeshem l'mikra. I'll give you another reason. How do we read the word? We read the word Shivuayim. What does Shivuayim mean? 14 days, 2 weeks, V'yeshen l'mikra. And we give what? Preference to the way the word is pronounced, not the way the word is written in the Torah. Now, in this case, let me ask you, what is the right way to write Shivuayim? I mean, is there a letter that's missing here, perhaps? It seems that way. It seems that the Gemara seems to imply that the way you would really write Shivuayim is with two yuds, probably, right? There should be another yud in there. So without the nekudos like you have in front of you over here, that word, I mean, if you'd show that to, most children, they would probably read it shivim. Some may say shivayim, but... Okay, thank you. Good. Maybe a vav, and not two yuds. Yeah. And two yuds also, no? Maybe, I don't know. But the implication seems to be that there is, that there would be a difference in the spelling. Right? Rashi actually says like both. Rashi writes out Shavuayim, he writes with two yuds and a vav. So the word over here does not look like it's supposed to say Shavuayim, but that's the way it's pronounced. So now we have another shita, namely Yehuda ben Roetz, who also says Yeshem leMikra. That's the second case. A question which you may be wondering, won't answer right now, but some of the Mefarshim try to explain, the whole Shaka V'Tayu. It's a little strange. Ekra Ani, it seems like it's saying a little more than it needs to, and then it says they left. Why did he wait for them to leave in order to tell him to say Yeshem leMikra? But the bottom line is, we have over here another precedent from Atana who says Yeshem leMikra. Okay, then the Gemara continues with Beishamai. Beishamai also. Where did Beishamai say Yesh Eim LeMikra? So another thing with necessary background over here. Take a look at the sheet. So this little paragraph over here comes straight out of Masifta Gemara. Masifta Gemara, in addition to having lots of commentary and Marmar Komos and lots of other things, they sometimes, when necessary, there's a nice introductory paragraph. So here's a nice introductory paragraph before we begin this next piece. It says, Achas me arba avodos hamatiros is a carbon, his rikas adam, ha carbon on his death. One of the four avodos, the four components of worship to which a carbon is ultimately going to be accepted, which is necessary for a carbon to be properly brought, is what's called Zrika Sadam, the sprinkling of the blood. What are the other three? What are the four necessary avodas? There's Shechita, right? There's slaughtering of the animal. There's the Kabbalah, where the Kohen receives the blood of the animal. The Halacha, where the blood is then carried to whoever it is going to be sprinkled. And then the Zrika. So the Shechita, the Kabbalah, the Halacha, and the Zrika, these are the four necessary avodas as part of the bringing of the carbon. So now we're talking about Zrika. V'yesh Chilot, there is a difference, depending on the type of carbon it is, as to how many times a sprinkling is done on the Mizbeach. Arba matonos b'chatos, when it comes to a carbon chatos, there are four matonos. Matonim literally means a gift, but over here, what that means is the sprinkling of the blood. So when it comes to carbon chatos, four matonos, four sprinklings, shtei matonos shehin arba ba'ola Hashem Shlamim, two matonos which are considered four when it comes to ola Hashem Shlamim. What does it mean? Shtayim shehin arba. So obviously there are four corners on the mizbeach. So four sprinklings, which mean one on each corner. Shtayim shehin arba is when they go to two opposite corners and sprinkle the blood in a way in which it splashes along both sides. So it's essentially every one of the four sides of the mizbeach are being sprinkled with blood, but it really consists of only two zrikos, two matanos. So when it comes to a carbon ola, ashem shlamim, it's called shtei matana shein arba. When matana achas b'bechor pesach, when it comes to other carbonos, such as bechor and pesach, so one matana is sufficient, one sprinkling. Kibisha b'fu b'ferk, chamisha b'sechah zvachim. And this is all outlined in the sixth chapter of Masechah Zvachim. Who's familiar with chamisha b'sechah zvachim? Please raise your hand. Okay, now everybody raise your hand. Just raise it. Raise it. We're all familiar with it. We say it every morning. Well, we're supposed to say it every morning. Even though I say every morning, I'm hoping that everybody here says it sometimes. So if you take a look, we're not going to read through it right now, but if you look at sources 4 through 12, it's kedai to see. I mean, it's bringing it alive. I mean, this is the davening. Part of the davening, we say Yizem HaKamon every morning. Actually, the minigun our shul, we don't say El Kabanos, but the minigun is to say Yizem HaKamon. So this perek, the fifth perek of Zvachim, talks about the differences between the karbanos in respect to where the shechit is done and where the zrika is done and how many zrikos for each type of karban. And I bolded for you, we're not going to go through them right now, but I bolded for you so you could just see, especially for those of you who are familiar with these words, I certainly include myself among people who say these words often but unfortunately do not give much thought to what's being said, So this is one of the very, very important points of the Mishnayos over here, namely how many zrikos are done and where are they done. So this is the subject of this parak, and again, every single Mishnah over here is bolded, highlighting where in the Mishnah talks about this very fact. V'chein, back in the paragraph, yeshchiluk b'makom and izrikadam. There's also a difference, depending on what carbon is, as to where the zrika is done. V'chatos ha-pnimios, there are certain chatos which are called chatos pnimios, literally inner chatos, kigon parilam davash tzibur, like for example, a carbon which is brought as an atonement for the entire tzibur, when the entire tzibur errs. Hadam nizrak al mizbeach hazav. In that case, the blood is sprinkled on the mizbeach hazav, which literally means the golden altar, the one that's inside, also known as the mizbeach hapnimi. That's the small altar, the one that's usually used for the hakrevas hakatoras. So that is used only on rare occasions, such as the chatas pnimis. The chatas yachid, when it comes to an individual carbon chatas, obviously one that would be brought much more frequently, hadam nizrak karnas al mizbeach bechoshes. That's sprinkled on the corners of the copper mizbeach, meaning the big one, the one that's found outside of the heichal. When we think of the mizbeach, the really big mizbeach, that's the mizbeach nechoshes. Ubishar karbanos, when it comes to all other karbanos, hadam nizrak al kir mizbeach lamata, the blood is actually sprinkled below, not all the way on top, on the corners on top, but rather on the wall, below on the mizbeach. Ogh lahakdim, another important point to preference this discussion with, there's a rule that applies to drushos that Chazal Dorish regarding kodshim sacrifices. When the Torah writes that something is required once, that's only considered a mitzvah, meaning that's what's required l'chachila, but for the eved, after the fact, it's not considered essential, it's not what we call ma'akim. The Rakshma Shinakta Pamayim, however, something that's written twice in the Torah. So then Omran, then we say Shashina Allah Akasov, Kide Lomar Shemasizehu La'akiv. The reason why the Torah repeats itself is to tell us that now it is not just referred, it's not just the mitzvah l'chachila, but it's even ma'akiv b'di'eved, and if you don't do it, so then the avoda is not considered to be done properly. Or the obligation has not been satisfied. So this is all sort of necessary background as we, you know, now take a little peek into, you know, a section of Torah that we're not necessarily as accustomed to, as familiar with. And of course, I don't mean to suggest that nobody here has ever studied Kachim before, but, you know, often we're not holding this as much as we are in other things. So what does it say over here? It's a Mishnah now coming from Zvachim, not from this parak, Yisrael Makoman. It says, Beis Shammai says, Kol Hanitonin al mizbeach achitzon shenitna matana achas kiper. Any, again, nitonin over here is like the word matana. Any sprinkling that is done in the mizbeach achitzon, the outer mizbeach. That's the mizbeach nechoshes, the big mizbeach. If one matana was used, meaning if there's only one sprinkling, so then kiper, then that is sufficient. One gets kapara. It's a question whether or not we are goreis. The next word shenemar, as it says, v'dam mizavachecho yishafech. Maybe there is a pasuk quoted here, maybe not. But Beis Shammai says, b'di'eved, one sprinkling is sufficient whenever we're talking about a karbon which sprinkling is done in mizbeach achitzon. So what type of karbonis does that include? Says Rashi says, kol anitanin, ola ushlamim v'asham, hatu'un shtei matana shein arba, shenatna matana achas kiper. When it comes to karbon ola ushlamim v'asham, which normally require four which are done through two, right? So really two sprinklings. If you do one, that's sufficient. The Chassid, it says, V'dam is the vechach yishafech, shvicha achas b'mashma. The Torah seems to imply one shvicha, one pouring, one sprinkling is sufficient. U'b'chatos, that's when it comes to ola shlamim and asham. U'b'chatos, continues v'shamim, when it comes to karbon chatos, shtei matanos, two matanos are necessary. The minimum, when it comes to karbon chatos, is v'shamim, is two matanos. You cannot get by with less than two zrikos of dam. Beis Hillel says, af b'chatos, shenitna matana achas kiper. Beis Hillel says, no, Beis Hillel more meikel than Beis Shammai, and they say, even one sprinkling is sufficient. Even one is enough. You don't need two. B'di'eved, everybody agrees that you need more l'chachila, but the question is, how many are sufficient b'di'eved? And we're not arguing right now about the ola, the shlamim, and the ashim. We're only arguing about the karbon chatos. Beis Shammai says, the bare minimum is two. You can't get by with less than that. Beis Hillel says, no, one is enough. So what are they arguing about? Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel, two, one, two, what's going on? But Amar Rav Huna explains, here is Here's the machlokas. My tami de Beishamai. The machlokas like this. Beishamai says, Kronos, Kronos, Kronos. Harekan Sheish. Kronos, what's Kronos, Kronos, Kronos? What is that? Three corners. How many corners? So three corners is there. So what are those? Kronos means corners. Kronos. So what's happening over here? So take a look at the sheet. Take a look at the sheet. At sources 14, 15, and 16. 14, 15, and 16 are three psukim that are found in very close proximity to each other. As you see, they're all coming from Vayikra Perak Dalid, Pasuk Chaf Hei, Pasuk Lamed, Lamed Dalid. These psukim, at first glance, seem like the same, but they're not. If you look closely, you'll see differences. But for the most part, they sound very similar. The Kohen takes from the blood of the Karban Chatos with his finger, and he places it on the corner of the Mizbeach, and he continues to sprinkle blood along the base of the Mizbeach. That's one pasuk. That's talking about the Karban Chatos that's brought by a Melech. And then the next pasuk, which is talking about an individual person's Chatos, that's called the Ma'yishpocha Yisarim Mizbeach. Very similar pasuk, although again some slight differences. And the third pasuk, talking also about a Karban Chatos Yachid, one is talking about a sheep and the other a goat. Lakach haKohen midama chatos be'etzba'o, v'nastan al karnos mizbach olah, that's called the Ma'yishpocha Yisarim Mizbeach. So these three pasuk are all similar, but different, and what they all contain is the same word. Karnos. Kuf resh nun tas. Now this is a little confusing over here, for a reason I'll show you in a moment. But right now it says, Karnos how many times? Three times. So that's what it means when it says back in the Gemara. Rabbi Huna says, my taima, Dvishamai. What's his reason? Karnos, Karnos, Karnos. It says Karnos three times. Hare kan shesh. Arba la mitzvah, ushtayim la akev. Do you remember the rule we said beforehand, the introductory rule? We said that there's a rule by kachra, not just here, there's a rule in all kachra, that whenever something is stated once in the Torah, that means it's l'chachila, but it's not ma'aki v'di'evit. When something is repeated, so then it's what? Then it's necessary v'di'evit. So 2 plus 2 plus 2 equals 6. Now the Torah seems to suggest of you need 6 sprinklings on 6 corners. The problem is, there are only 4 corners on the mizbeach. Okay. So 6 minus 4 is 2. So now we have 2 extra corners, which don't exist. So what do we do with them? We say, 4 l'chachila, 2 b'di'evit. That's what it means. Harikan shesh. 4 l'mitzvah, 4 are necessary l'chachila. However, we'll accept b'di'evit, 2. 2 l'akiv. That's b'shama. Is hilal omim, karnos, karnos, karnos. What's the difference? But look, you see the Gemara says one of them has a vav, the other two don't. Harekan arba. So you have 4. How do you have 4? Well, karnos, the first karnos is equal to 2, because it says with the vav it's written malay. And the other ones, karnos, is each one is 1. So 2 plus 1 plus 1 is 4. I can arba. So you have shlosha la mitzvah, the achas lake. So that means 4 are considered for the mitzvah, and 1 b'di'evit. Says the Gemara. Oh, hold on one second. Good. Ve'ema kulu l'mitzvah says, wait a second. Why are you doing that? There are 4 corners, so why are you saying 4, so we should divide it 3 and 1? What do you mean? It should be, all of them should be l'mitzvah, and how many la'akev? None. In other words, it should be, come out to the Kohen Beis Hillel, l'chachil, you should sprinkle on all 4 corners, but for the Eved, if you sprinkled nowhere, it's good. So it says, that can't be why. Kapara v'chdi lo ashkechan. We never find that a person could achieve kapara, b'chdi, which means with nothing, with no sprinkle whatsoever. There has to be always a minimal zrikas adam. And so therefore, we can't say that it's 4 l'chachila, 0 b'di'evit. So therefore, Beis Hillel says, okay, we'll say 3 l'chachila, 1 b'di'evit. Because they don't generate the number 6 to start with, so therefore, we're dealing with a smaller number, and we end up with essentially a kula. Now, you point out correctly that if you look at my sheet, I didn't make this sheet, I took it, took these texts out of, the Bar Ilan CD over there, so we assume they did their homework. Now it's not quite what it says over here. In the Gemara it says, Basila says, Karnos with a Vav, and then Karnos Karnos eats without a vav. But the way it appears over here is that every word Karnos in our Torah is written chaser, and the answer is that is correct. That's correct. So that's a good find. You're not the first one to find it. Shonen point that out, and raises all sorts of interesting questions. Many, you know, what's going on over here? You know, why is it the Gemara seems to suggest that there's supposed to be a different text? And what makes it all the more frustrating, of course, is over here it's not just, oh, look at that, we noticed the discrepancy in the text. This is good for the point that the Gemara is trying to develop over here. And that is, sometimes words are written in chaser, sometimes they're written in malay, sometimes they're written one way and pronounced another way. And that makes all the difference in understanding, you know, what it is. So that's complicated. But clearly, the Gemara is working on the assumption that Karnos, in fact, the first Karnos is written with a vav, and the latter two are not. And so therefore, the Gemara reaches a conclusion. Now, this particular Mishnah does not say explicitly, Yeshem l'mikra, Yeshem l'masoas. But the Gemara is sort of inferring that, and says, you see from here, the Bishami says Yeshem l'mikra. How do you see it says Yeshem? Because they look at the word Karnos, and say, I don't care how it's spelled. I don't care that it's spelled without a vav. How is it pronounced? It's pronounced Karnos, which means plural. Corners, corners, corners. 2 plus 2 plus 2 is 6. That's how Bishamai gets their number for the Chachila to be the Eved. So Bishamai say, Yeshem l'mikra, which is, you know, number 3 on our list. Okay? This is like strange stuff, a little bit. Yeah. In other words, why does it say Karnos at all? It's because Ibn al Karanim is bad. So the reason is because in each and every of these cases, these are not really, if you understand them in context over here, each and every one of these is talking about three different types of karbanos, and each one is saying you should place it on the corners. But we're trying to extrapolate, you know, a general rule that would be applicable on all of them, so therefore we're sort of counting, you know, how many references to corners we have. But it wouldn't make sense to say it's placed on the Karen, because actually what the Torah is saying that in all these cases it should be placed on the Kronos, not just on one, but on multiple corners. Right? That makes sense? Another question which one could ask over here, and you may not be in the Ein Dorsh Techilas mode at the moment, so I'll forgive you, but you remember several weeks ago we saw the concept of Ein Dorsh Techilas, which means that when you're counting numbers like this, the first one can't go towards the number. The first one, we say, is necessary to teach the din. Now, I would not necessarily have brought that up were not for the fact that the very next Gemara, the very next case we're going to see right now in a moment, is actually going to raise that very issue over here. You know, the first one, Chad the Gufe, Ein Dorsh Techilas. So how does that, why does the Gemara sometimes do it, sometimes not? When do we say, so it's not on the sheet, because I discovered this after I went to press, but Tosfos HaRosh, I have it over here in front of me, Tosfos HaRosh asked that question, and says, Kein Tema Kan Lekamon, we say, Gabe, we can see this here, Tosfos, it says, Chad the Gufe, because we say Ein Dorsh Techilas. So why over here do we Shami say, Karnos, Karnos, Karnos? What do you mean? The first Karnos should be eliminated from the discussion. Why? Because the first one is necessary to teach the din itself, and then the other two. So then you should essentially, Beis Shammai should, just like Beis Hillel. So, Tosfos Rashi gives us a rule. The Yishlomar, Nehecha Dekseidi V'chada Parsha, when you have multiple words that are being counted, you know, towards some multiple in one parsha, doesn't mean, you know, like parshas by Yikra Tzav, but it means in one specific topic. So then, Shayach Lemeima Harishon Legufei V'Achrinu Minyana. Then we say the first one comes to Gufei and the other ones go towards the count. About Kiloksi V'Vachad Parsha. But when you have Sukkim that are not grouped in one place, Lo Shayach Lemeima Chad Legufei. We don't say Chad Legufei, Dim Kein Kul Tzrich Legufei. Each one should be needed for itself. And over here, even though, again, it's somewhat deceiving, because if you look at chapter verse, they're all really within several psukim of each other, but each and every one of these are actually a separate parasha. If you look at the Torah, you'll see that these are not written as one parasha. These are separate parashios. So therefore, we don't say, nobody would say Ein Dorsh Techilas in that case. Each one is necessary to teach its din, but we can take a step back and look at the whole discussion and say, how many references to corners are there in regards to the sprinkling of by Adam Chatos in the Torah? You have 6. According to Beis Shammai, or 4 according to Beis Hillel. Okay, so far we've seen that Revi reviewed them as Ben Broed, and Beis Shammai all hold Yeshem Lemikra. Okay, what's the next case? What is the next case? Lost my place. One second. Okay, Okay, Reb Shimon. Reb Shimon says the Tanya. So Reb Shimon is the fourth Tanya. The Tanya we find in the Brayse the following: Shtayim kihulchasan u'shlishis afilu tefa. Two have to be in accordance with the proper law, l'chachila, and one even a tefa. And I'm sorry, and a third even a tefa. What's this talking about? More familiar area of halacha, hilchos sukkah. Right, it's only a month away. It's only a month behind us. Hopefully, you all remember. So, the Brayse says, according to the Tanakhama, a kosher sukkah consists of two walls kihulchasan, which means they have to be a minimum of, who remembers, what size? Has to be at least, well, 10 tefachim high, right? 10 tefachim high, but how wide? Right, I'm sorry, 7 tefachim wide. And the third wall has to be at least a tefach. Reb Shimon says, Shalosh kihulchasan u'revi'is afilu tefach. Reb Shimon says, no. A kosher sukkah must consist of at least three walls, each of which are at least 7 tefachim wide, and then you can have the fourth wall, which is also necessary, can be as small as a tefach. So machlokes tanoim. We paskin like the more familiar, the Tanakam is the more familiar sheet of two in a tefach, but Rav Shimon says three in a tefach. Okay, so b'maikim miflugi, what's the machlokes? So Rabbanan Tzavi Yeshem l'masores. Rav Shimon says Yeshem l'mikra. The question is, what are we paying closer attention to? The way the word is written in the Torah or the way it is pronounced? Rabban Savi Yeshim Lamasores, Basukos, Basukos, Basukos. What does that mean? Basukos, Basukos, Basukos. So take a look at the sheet again. This one is, in fact, accurate. You will not find any discrepancy over here between what we have on the sheet, what we have in our Sefer Torah, and what we have in the Gemara. Pasuk from Bayuka Perachov Gimel, source number 17. Basukos Te Shru Shilas Yamim. For 7 days you shall dwell in Sukkos. Every citizen of Israel shall dwell in a sukkah, so that future generations should know that when you left Mitzrayim, you sat in sukkahs. So how many references to sukkahs in these psukim? Three. First one is spelled chaser. Second one, same thing. No vav. The third one is written mullet. Right? It's written mullet. So you have over here sukkos, sukkos, sukkos. That's what it means when it says over here, sukkah, sukkah, sukkah. So now back in the Gemara. Rabbanan say, Yeshem l'msores, bas. So I think the way we'll read this is, basukas, basukas, basukos. And that's because Rabbanan, Meshitasam, they're saying we look at the way the word is written. Not that Rabbanan would actually read it that way. That's not the way the word would be read in shul. But for our purpose, for the purpose of darshaning the word, we're going to say, look at it. It really says basukas. Basukas, basukos. So how many, so what do you, sukkas is one, sukkas is two, and sukkos is four. Harikan arba. So dal chad kralugufe, so what you do is what? You knock off one wall for itself. That's another way of saying what? Ein darshan tchilos. The first reference to sukkah you can't count towards the minyan, because that's necessary to just teach the din itself. Namely, that we're talking about a sukkah over here. Pashulu plus. You have how many remaining? Three. Asoy hilchosa girasol shlishis. Comes along the halach lemosh misinai, which tells us that one of the walls can be shorter, and you have what? You're left with two plus a small one. Vukim ta tefach, and we apply the halach lemosh misinai about a smaller wall to the third wall. Reb Shimon says basukos, basukos, basukos. Harekan sheish. You have six. No, don't get nervous. We're not going to have a six-wall sukkah over here. Reb Shimon says, Dal chad kol gufe. The first basukos, again, gets knocked off. Why? Because you need it for itself. Pashu la'arba, so you're left with four. Asoy hilchosol girasol revias v'kimtah tefach. So that remains, that leaves us with what? Four remaining walls. Dal lochel moshim yisinai knocks down one of those walls to a tefach. So we're left with three in a tefach. Yeah.
In this particular case, there's no strength to the kriya at all.
What do you mean? I'm not sure why that matters. No, but maybe you were probably paying closer attention than I've been until now. You're saying that in the other cases, you could in theory have read it one way, but we just don't read it that way.
Right.
But I don't think that's the Gemara's point over here. That's interesting. But when the Gemara says Yeshem l'masores, you don't have to make a case that it can in fact be read that way. We're just looking at the way the word is written. Completely out of context. Yeah, that's what Masoros means. Meaning not the way it reads, And thank you for pointing out that the prior, I guess, four examples, starting with Yashu'un maybe, and then Shivim, and Karnos. So these are all words that, you know, you could have gotten away with reading it, right? Karnas, right? I guess that's what it'd be. And obviously Shivuayim, or Shivim. But over here, you couldn't say Basukas. That's correct. But still, Yeshem HaMasoros mean we're paying close attention to the way the word is written, to how it's transcribed in the Torah, not the way it is pronounced. Okay? Another important question, I mean, there's so many things to think about and deal with over here. What's this idea of the Halacha Moshe Sinai knocking down a tefach, knocking down one wall, one remaining wall to a tefach? It's also a strange lesson the Gemara uses. We'll come back. We'll see. But this is now the fourth sheet that says Yeshayim Lamikra. And the fifth and final one in this list is, who remembers, Rabbi Kiva. Four lines from the bottom of the page. Rabbi Kiva, the Tanya, we learn the following advice. Rabbi Kiva says, Minayim l'revi'ez dam sheyotza mishnei mesim shemitami ba'ohel. Shenemer akol nashos mes lo yavo. Shtei nefashos vishiyur echot. Rabbana nafshat ksiv. What's the background over here? What's going on over here? So we know that a mace, a corpse that is found in a building, a room, under any cover, a tent, or as there's a large object that's on top of the mace. So the tumah is not only if one, the tumah that can be generated is not only one who touches the mace, but one who is under the same covering, the same roof, right? That's called Tumas Ohel, right? So anybody who's in the house at that time, anybody who's in the same roof will become Tumas, which is why a Kohen, of course, has to be very careful before entering a building in which a mace is found. Even if he's not going to be anywhere near the mace, he may still contract Tumah via what we call Tumas Ohel. So certainly, if we're talking about an entire corpse that's in the body, that's going to generate Tumas. Same is true if there are certain parts of a body, certain amounts of flesh. What about when it comes to blood? So when it comes to blood, the amount of blood that can be metame ba'ohel is how much? A revius. A revius of dam is metame ba'ohel. By the way, that's talking about a revius of dam that came from a mace. You know, that if a person dies, and a person bleeds to death, that's called dam nefesh. If a person donates blood, they're going to donate much more than a revius of dam, but that's not metame. That's not considered, there's no too much mace over there. But when it comes to blood, that came from a person who was dying, so that actually causes tumah, that creates tumah. So the Gemara, the Brice over here says, Rabbi Kiva says, how do we know that if you have one revius from two mason, that's matame ba'ohel? One revius from two mason, right? It's a strange case, but you have two people died, each one bled just a little bit, right, and their bodies are no longer here, but their blood is still in the building. It's together. So how do we know that causes tumas ohel? Shenemar, the pasuk says, "Al kol nachshos meis lo yavo." It's talking there about a kohen, but it would apply to anybody who was careful to track when they were tamei. "Al kol nachshos meis lo yavo." A kohen is not to come al nachshos meis. Nachshos meis. What does nachshos meis mean? So that means shtein nefashos v'shir echad. It sounds like it's talking about two souls that amount to one shiur. Says Rashi, shtei nefashos, a revius first, says Rashi. Revius, he shiur chiyus or shaladim. Revius is considered to be the shiur chiyus. It's not considered to be, any blood that's less than that is not considered to be chiyus or shaladim. Shtei nefashos, says Rashi, Mashma mishnei b'nei adam. It sounds like from two people. Akol nafshos. The kosav, and it says, mace, kedei misa haini revius. But how do you take nafshos and mace and put them together? Nafshos is two people. Mace implies that it was kedei misa. So the way we do that, says Rabbi Kiva, is we say, essentially we're talking about part of a revius from one mace, part from another. They combine and create a source of tumah. The Rabbanan say no. Nafshas ksiv. The Rabbanan say, no. What does it say? Actually, look at the word. So this is the last pasuk that's quoted on the page. I'm sorry, it's not last. Gagdolas number 18. It's a mistake here. It's actually Parachav Gimel. This is Parshas Emor. It's not Parachav Aleph. But anyway, what does it say? It says it's pronounced Nafshos, but it's written Nafshas. So the Rabbanim say, Yesh Ein Lamasores. That the Rabbanim say, no. A revius of dam that comes from two people is not Matame Ba'ohel. But Rabbi Kiva says it is. Because Rabbi Kiva holds, Yesh Ein Lamikra. So we see that Rebbe reviewed them in Roach, Beishamai, Rabbi Shimon, and Rabbi Kiva all hold Yeshin Lamikru. We've seen five different cases. And all these cases, these Tanoim, give preference to the way the word is pronounced rather than the way the word is written in the Torah. Yes. Yes, so Tosos actually quotes that right over here. There are other cases. These are not the only ones. There are other cases where we have such discussions. And in fact, on the next page, we're going to see other cases that come up. Yeshem Lemikri, Yeshem Lesoras, that sugya appears in several different places. In Psachim, in Sukkah, you'll find other examples. The question is, though, before we're not out of time yet, but we're approaching that point, just a couple of thoughts to consider as we still try to process and digest this idea of Yeshem Lemikri, Yeshem Lesoras. When in fact do we have to actually take a position on this issue? Is it in every case where the word is written one way and pronounced another way? As Rashi seems to imply, Rashi says, Yeshem Lemikra Basakriyaz Lina, Dihi Ikar. That basically whenever we, according to these Tanoim, who say Yeshem Lemikra, whenever we have a word that's written one way and pronounced another way, we really consider the way it's pronounced to be the primary way that we understand it. And if you say Yeshem Lemasoras, you say no, that we're really paying attention to the way the word is written. That seems to be what Rashi implies, that applies that in all situations. Tosus over here, however, Tosus Divasu Kulhu, if you skip the first, I don't know, about 8-9 lines or so in Tosus, the second Tosus of the page, Tosus writes, Vinire, the Dafka Hocha Shemikra Masoras Mechashi Adadi, Isluhu Yeshem Lemikra. Tosus suggests that the whole discussion in the Gemara as to whether or not Yehol Geshem Lemikra, Yeshem Lemasoras, is only in a situation where there is a clash between the two, where interpreting the word one way, namely following the Masoras, would lead to one conclusion, one halachic conclusion, whereas interpreting the other way, according to the way the word is pronounced, will come to another one. So you have a clash. So you have to choose one or the other. That's when we say, according to the Sadam, Yeshem Lemikra. About Hechel Lemachashi Adadi, however, in a case where the two explanations are not mutually exclusive, darshi travayhu. So then we can actually be doresh both interpretations. Tosu says that you don't have to take a stand on Yeshem Lemikra Lesoras unless there's actually a clash between the two interpretations. Tosu seems to suggest over here that, well, he gives an example, but actually there are many cases which maybe you could find in which a word is pronounced differently than it is written, and you can darshan it in accordance with both ways because those two pshatim do not contradict each other. So the example that he gives over here, or the reason he says this, is the HaRebi, Rabbi Kiva, Rabbi Shimon, the Savri Hocha, Yeshem Lemikra. How do I know that? So it says Tosos because there are several Tanaim over here who the Gemara is saying hold Yeshem Lemikra. They include Rabbi Kiva, Rabbi Shimon, and Rebbe. But yet, all of those Tanaim, Mechayvim, Perek Safik, Ochal, Perek Dam Shchita, Bechatichas, Acha Safik, Shachelev, Safik, Shashuman, Asham Tali, Mishum, the Mitzvah Ksiv. The Gemara over there in Krisus, both in Krisus, has a discussion about when a person brings an Ashram Talui.
What's an Ashram Talui?
So we know what a carbon chatzos is brought when a person violates an Isser in the Torah that carries with it a Kiv Kares, Bishogig, right? He accidentally was Machal Shabbos, he accidentally ate Chalev, so then he brings a carbon chatzos. He knows for sure he sinned, but it was an error. It wasn't done intentionally. So then he brings his carbon chatos. An ashram talui is brought when a person is unsure if he committed a sin that would carry with it a chiyuv kares. So there are two. One theoretical scenario is a person had a piece of meat and he wasn't sure if it was chalev or not. The question was raised after the fact, and he may have just eaten a part of one of the forbidden parts of chalev in an animal. One of the parts were forbidden fat. So how did you come to that situation? So there are two possibilities. Either he has one piece of meat and he eats it, and then after the fact he's not sure if it's chaylev or shuman. He said, whoa, what was this? So somebody says it was shuman, the other person says it was chaylev. It's gone, there's no way to know what it was. He knows that he ate it, so that's one case. Another case is you have two pieces of meat. One is definitely chaylev, one is definitely shuman, and he eats one of them and he's not sure which one he ate. So the question is, machlokes tanoim, as to whether or not you bring an ashen talui in the first case. The second case, for sure you bring an ashen talui. Why do you for sure bring it there? Because you know for certain that there was chaylev there. You're just not sure if you ate it. But in the case where you ate, there was only one piece of meat, and you're not sure if it was chaylev anyway, so then it's a machlokes tanoim. So these tanoim over here, Rebbe, Rekibi, Shimon, all hold that in fact, in that case, you do bring an ashen talui. And what's the basis for that? Because the pasuk says, I don't have the whole pasuk over here, but who remembers? I'll call mitzvos. I will not succeed to quote it out of context over here, so I'm not even going to bother. But you know what? Hold on 1 second. Give me 1 second. Unless somebody remembers it, by all means. What does the pasuk say? 1 second. That's the pasuk that says when you bring an ashen talui. When a person violates one of the mitzvos Hashem, he does it and he's not sure if he did it. Now, the word is pronounced mitzvos. It is written mitzvahs. It's one vav. It is written mem tzadi vav tav, but it's pronounced mitzvos. So that's the case. Sounds like a yeshem mikra, yeshem lasoras case. Where those tanoim who passing over here, yeshem lemikra, say we follow the way the word is written, Yeshem Lamasaras, and even though you have one piece of meat, you still bring an Ashen Talui. So it's also, you see from there that you don't have to always be a Yeshem Lamikra guy or a Yeshem Lamasaras guy. You can actually follow both the Mikra and Lamasaras when those two interpretations are not at odds with each other. When, in fact, they are mutually exclusive and you can have to choose one or the other. So then the Gemara suggests over here that we have a list of Tanoim that actually say Yeshem Lamikra. The majority of Tanoim actually say Yeshem Lamasaras. This group over here, if in fact they do hold this, because the Gemara on the next page is going to say they don't, if in fact they do, so they are in the minority. So Rashi seems to imply the question of the Yeshem Lamikra, Yeshem Lamasaras is a general question as to which way you go. Tosfos suggests that it's only so in a case where there's a clash. Other Rishonim suggest somewhat of a compromise between the two. We're out of time. So I usually don't tell you the chazer during the week, but this would be a great week if you just chazer the Gemara, because like I said, next week we're going to have to try to unravel all of this, and it would be helpful to review during the week, so we shouldn't spend more than just a few minutes on Chazara, in the beginning of the Shia next week. Sure.